process for achievement in life is being, then doing, then having. So you had to step into the being first. And now the more you do that, now you're building up your own resume.
Today's guest is Dre Baldwin, former professional basketball player turned entrepreneur and mindset coach who helps people become more disciplined, consistent, and mentally strong to succeed personally and professionally.
I set goals every month. I set goals for the year. I set goals even longer than that, 5 years, 10 years, lifetime goals.
How much does the idea of faith play into mental toughness, and what does faith mean to you?
The people who make big change in our society and in life, they're the people who have the highest levels of initiative because they are applying faith instead of faking it until you make it and pretending to be Kevin Durant or Tiger Woods or Serena Williams. Instead, become the best version of yourself by borrowing confidence from that other person and then applying it to you. So now, again, you can watch your own film instead of watching his film.
Mr. Dre Baldwin, welcome to the podcast, my friend. We're so happy to have you here.
Anthony, thank you for having me on. I'm excited for this conversation.
So what I think is really interesting about your background is you're a guy who's performed at a high level in a number of domains. First, as an athlete, and overcoming a lot of challenges and honestly like a tough start getting into your career to going and playing professional basketball overseas. But what's fascinating is you're able to translate your ability to be consistent, high performing in athletics into a professional capacity to succeed, to really just create consistent results, to build a brand, and now to help so many people, especially people over 40, now reach their prime, reach a higher level of effectiveness. And so in our conversation today, I want to break down your framework that you call work on your game, which is four principles that you've developed, as you know, to really just crush it in life. And before we get there, though, I think it'd be nice for us to hear a little bit about your backstory of how you got to developing this framework, what shaped you as a man, where you're at in your life right now, and then we'll get into the mental habits and disciplines that you've developed that have led to so much success.
Sure. Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully I can live up to that layout there. So my background, as you said, as an athlete, I only played 1 year high school ball. Because I just got around to basketball pretty late. I always played sports, but basketball was like the last stop. 1 year high school ball, walked on to play Division III college ball, played in college, but at the Division III level. It's not like you got a bunch of pro teams knocking down your door coming out of that level. So my first year out of school, I worked a couple regular gigs, worked at Foot Locker. I worked at a gym, selling memberships. And then a year removed from college, I went to this event called an exposure camp, which is basically like a casting call for athletes. Played pretty well there. I leveraged my performance there to go and basically sold myself to find an agent to represent me. I found one agent to represent me out of a bunch who I reached out to. Reached out to about 60, found one. He decided to sign me. He got me signed to my first contract. That's how I started playing professional ball. And this is in 2005 to give everybody a timeline here. Now, that same year, I took the footage from that exposure camp and I put it up on this new website called YouTube. And that's where I started to kind of get myself known online, because that's how I started to build an audience. And this was all basketball players. So my audience and my content was all just basketball related stuff. And then after a few years, maybe about 2009-ish, those players started asking questions about the mindset behind what they saw me doing, because obviously they knew I could play and I was already teaching them, hey, here's how you dribble, here's how you shoot, here's how you practice. But they wanted to know the mentality behind it, because a lot of players, even though they had the ability, the mentality was still lacking. So they weren't able to apply the ability they were learning from me in the actual games. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started talking about things like discipline and confidence and mental toughness and initiative. And that became the foundation of work on your game, because what happened, Anthony, is a bunch of people who were not athletes started seeing the mindset stuff I was putting out and telling me that, hey, this stuff applies to me and I don't even play sports. So that's how I knew how I would transition from having a sports audience to a everybody else audience. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much how we got here. And since 2015, when I stopped playing, that's what I've been doing full time.
That's awesome. And I can't help but smile, because this conversation is just so relevant to our Fit Father and Fit Mother communities. Because if we look around at people who are trying to get healthier, to lose weight, to exercise, it's not that they lack the information. It's all about lacking the application or struggling with mindset, consistency, discipline, cravings. So as we go through this conversation, right, Everyone listening, I want you to be thinking about your own challenges professionally, but maybe even with your own health. And as Dre breaks down his frameworks and how they apply, like, start to think about where your gaps are and what you can fill in. That's what's going to make this conversation so useful for you. And I just want to, before we get into the framework, I would just want to brag on Dre one more time. I mean, this man has written 33 books, He's done 4 TED Talks. He's published over 20,000 pieces of content. That's videos, articles. So it's like you're producing at a level that is extraordinary, like top 1% of 1% in terms of production. So you obviously have some things figured out that most people don't. So let's get into it. Like, how do you teach the framework? What do you break down in terms of work on your game framework? Let's get into that immediately.
Sure. So our full framework is based around mindset, strategy, systems, and accountability. But where it started was just the mindset piece for athletes. So you want to talk about the mindset part?
Yeah, let's go in that.
Okay. So the mindset is based around the 4 things that I referenced quickly earlier, which is discipline of showing up every day to do the work, confidence to put yourself out there boldly and authentically, the mental toughness to continue showing up, doing the work, putting yourself out there, even when the success you've expected to achieve has yet to occur, and the personal initiative to go in, make things happen instead of waiting for things to happen.
Okay, let's break down the first one then. So the first one was the discipline to do the work. Like, speak into that. Like, what does that mean? How does that actually practically apply? Like, how does one create discipline? Just talk about the concept of it, I guess.
Discipline is the most important aspect of everything that I do, and is the most important aspect of anything. If I'm working with someone, discipline is the most important part of what we're going to do together. Even though someone may come to me, Dre, I want to make more money in my business, or I want to finish writing my book, or I want to launch a podcast, whatever. Discipline is going to be the foundational asset that allows that stuff to happen and makes it work. So when it comes to discipline, it's, as I said, showing up every day to do the work, and the framework that we use to kind of teach that and instill it is called the third day. And the third day is all about how you show up and give your best effort when you least feel like it, even on the days when your energy is lacking, you're not really feeling like it. Maybe you had an amazing day today before, you're trying to fight against complacency, or you had a terrible day today before, and maybe you're just trying to get yourself, you're trying to light the fire all over again. So the third day is all about those days when, again, you're not really feeling like it, but you have to deliver anyway, because definition of a professional is a person who shows up and delivers every single time, regardless of how they're feeling. That's how we define it. And that extends on the dictionary definition of professional, Anthony, which is someone who does something as their main paid occupation. So the discipline is a huge part of any successful professional's life, because none of us always feel like doing the thing that we have to do. Mm-hmm. I'm sure in your practice, there are times you don't feel like doing what you need to do, whatever the job may be, whether it's recording the show or anything else you do in your business. And it's the same thing in the sports world. There are days we don't feel like practicing. There are times maybe you're not even feeling like playing in the game, depending on who the game is against. Maybe the other team's terrible. Maybe you're not getting enough playing time, whatever the situation may be. There are always times we don't really feel like showing up, but the true professional must show up, and they have to show up as if they're really excited to be there. So you look at the top professionals performing in anything, I'm sure they have days that they don't really feel like working, but if you watched them, you wouldn't know which day that was based on following their energy.
Yeah.
That's what discipline is about.
So does that mean we've made a commitment to something like ahead of time and we just stick to that? And then I guess what's the aspect of like, what do we actually commit to? Like, discipline seems like, so give an example of someone who's exercising, working out, and like trying to get healthier or build some muscle. Like, we commit to something like working out 3-4 times a week or following a particular kind of diet. Like, how does discipline, like, how does that show up? Is it like you never miss anything? Like, never skip a workout? And that might be the framework. I'm curious. Or like, how does it meet the road? Because I think it's one thing you could just say, I'm a disciplined person, but how does it actually work with the schedule? And is it possible to like overcommit to things, or just like, what's the practicality of it and apply it to, I guess, a weight loss example? That'd be helpful for us.
Okay. So when it comes to a weight loss example, first of all, discipline comes from structure. So it's not necessarily about never missing a workout. It's about structuring your life or your day or your work around the outcome that you're looking to achieve. So does it mean that you have to work out 7 days a week? Absolutely not. Maybe your structure is only 5 days a week. Maybe your structure is 3 times a week, whatever it may be. And it doesn't mean that maybe once in a while, maybe because of extenuating circumstances, maybe you'll miss a workout. Maybe you were traveling. Maybe you're on vacation. Maybe you got injured. Maybe you're sick. Whatever the situation is, the good thing about having a structure is that even when you jump off of the structure, you can jump right back into it.
Sure.
So it's easy to get back on track, even if you happen to fall off track. Mm-hmm. That's the most important part of the structure that produces discipline. It's not that, because we're humans, right? And human beings are not perfect. Mm-hmm. And all of us is going to have a time that we may slip off, some may more often than others. However, when you have a clean process, it's so easy to get back to it. That's the most important part. Not that you never slip, but that you can get back.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me, because it's one thing to have a high level of commitment, but that commitment needs to be in the container of like a structure that works and makes sense. And it's not about being perfect, but it's about being really, really consistent. So speak to me about, like, let's say I'm a type of person that committed to 3 days a week working out at 5 a.m. And that's and that's early for me, let's say. And it's Wednesday, and this is my second workout of the week, and I just don't feel like it. Like, alarm goes off, and there's no extenuating circumstance that means that, like, that was preventing me from really working out. It's just, like, there's mental resistance. Like, what do I do in that moment to actually apply that discipline to get into the exercise in the gym? Like, is there anything I do with my mindset, my mentality? Like, how do I get in there and make sure I blast through that resistance?
So at that moment, you're saying you're still laying in bed, or where are you?
Like, I haven't even moved yet. Like, I know it's a workout. Alarm goes off. I have the ability to snooze right there, and I absolutely don't feel like it. Like, what happens? What do I do? How do I make sure that I show up and stay committed in that moment of weakness?
Well, you get up and you get dressed and you go to the gym. That's the short answer. The long answer is you get prepared for this ahead of time, because these are the third days. That day that you just described is what we call the third day. All right, that's the day when the novelty's worn off, the newness of the situation is gone, and that's when you realize, hey, this thing that I signed up for here is not one big party. Mm-hmm. It's not all fun and games, and there are going to be some days that you don't feel like doing the job. And this right here, the decision that you make in that moment, is what separates those who actually reach their goals from those who don't. Mm-hmm. Those who get close, but they don't actually reach it. So when you know that that's coming, and that's the reason why we have the third day, is not that some drill sergeant is going to show up and scream at you till you get out of bed. It's knowing ahead of time that you're going to have these days, so that when it happens, it's easier to deal with. Mm-hmm. What I found, and I've heard a lot of people say this, is that when you put a label on something, it's easier to deal with it than when it's existing, but you aren't quite sure how to put a finger on it. So when you put a finger on the third day and say, okay, there's going to be a day somewhere in here, let's say your personal trainer is talking to you, you just signed up for 30 sessions. Somewhere around session number 8 or 9, you're not going to feel like it, and alarm's going off, and you're thinking about grabbing your phone and just texting me and saying, I'm not coming. All right, that day is going to happen. So when that day happens, I want you to remember that I told you this was coming. And I want you to get here anyway. That's the day that I'm going to need you to do more than what you need to do today. Because today, we're talking in the first session, you're excited because you signed up voluntarily. You want to do it. You want to get in shape. I got you all excited about what I'm going to help you do. It's about day 7 or 8. You're going to feel like that. That's the day that I need you to use a little bit of your own energy and run off your own energy just to get here. Mm-hmm. And I'll take care of things from here. But I can't do everything for you. You have to get out of bed. So as long as we put a label on it, it's much easier to handle.
That totally makes sense to me. Just being aware that when that happens, you can label it. I would say, from my personal experience, also remembering how good it feels on the other side of that. Like, especially on those days where you don't want to go, and then you go and you get it done, you're like, I feel fantastic. I'm so glad I did. And then the other thing that really feels motivating for me is just every time you make a commitment, you're really putting your integrity on the line with that thing. You've created a container of your own integrity. And if you don't follow through with that, you're like weakening your word in that sense, your word to yourself. And I think that's a huge aspect of why even the smallest things end up being huge things, because that's your ability to follow through on anything. I'm sure you agree with that.
Absolutely. And the integrity that you have with yourself is really about building that trust in yourself. Mm-hmm. And that trust that you build in yourself is based on whatever you tell yourself you're going to do, you actually following through and doing it. And it leads right into, I'm sure, where this conversation is going next, because discipline creates confidence.
Yeah.
The more disciplined you are and the more consistent you are at honoring your own word, the more you believe you. Mm-hmm. And all confidence is a belief in your ability to do something. So the more you can stick to your own disciplines because you have a structure to follow, it actually lends itself to you being a more confident individual.
Yeah. And that, and just for everyone who's catching up to this, this is the second part of the framework, discipline. First, we've talked about, now we're moving into confidence. And what I think is kind of like, just ironic's not the right word, but just it's how it is. In the beginning stages, when you're starting to build discipline and you're doing something new, you probably have the least amount of confidence. So like, that's why it's so vulnerable to like start something new, because you're kind of fragile. But as you flex that discipline, you gain this confidence. And that confidence probably feeds back into the discipline and then leads to more consistency. So it's like these things really feed into each other. Now, is there anything someone can do to just like straight up bolster their confidence outside of like providing a track record of like, I've showed up? Like, is there anything they can look into their past and be like, I've done stuff before, or like any other kind of mental inventory or mindset stuff that can help someone build up their confidence?
Yeah, absolutely. Because even when, let's take an example like sports. So in a sport like basketball or boxing or tennis or anything, you can practice a lot. That's discipline. Showing up with your trainer or your team and you're doing all the practice, so you're getting ready for the game. But when you get to the game, all the stuff that you practice is not going to happen exactly the same way in the game. So you have a ton of experience practicing, and of course you have the skills and the abilities, but there's a whole different thing when you have to do that in the game against a live opponent in front of a crowd of people. You don't have much experience doing that because you haven't done that part yet. So where do you get your confidence from for the actual performance? And this is an important question. A lot of athletes used to ask me this, like, Dre, I do all your drills by myself all the time, but then I get in the game and I don't do the same stuff. How do we fix that? So the answer is, we call this borrowing your confidence. Mm-hmm. And borrowing your confidence is not faking it till you make it. I actually don't even believe in that concept, but I'll explain that in a second. Borrowing your confidence would be like, are you a sports fan, Anthony?
Yeah.
What's your sport? Who's your favorite athlete?
I like basketball. I watched the Phoenix Suns a little bit.
Okay, so let's take Kevin Durant. Yep. So let's say some basketball player tells me that their favorite player is Kevin Durant, but they get in the game and even though they practice a lot, they aren't able to do their stuff. So I would say, all right, your favorite player is Kevin Durant? And they say, yeah. I say, okay. If Kevin Durant was going to play in the game that you have tomorrow, how would he walk into the arena? All right, how would he walk onto the court? Mm-hmm. How would he warm up? What kind of energy would he have? How would he feel about himself? What would he be thinking when he looks across the court and he sees the opponent and the other team? What kind of aura and what kind of posture, mental posture, physical as well, would he bring to the game? Now, I would tell that player, since that's your favorite player, I want you to envision that in him because you probably watch him a lot since you like him. And I want you to embody that energy, still be you, but you're going to embody his energy. Mm-hmm. All right. That's a form of borrowing your confidence.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to tell them to pretend to be Kevin Durant. That's impossible. You can't do that. And the problem with pretending or faking it till you make it is that faking it has to end.
Yeah.
Because you tell your subconscious mind you're faking. That means at some point you have to stop faking.
Yeah.
But instead, if you borrow your confidence, you're just borrowing energy from another person. You're using what we call mirror neurons. You look at what another person is doing and you can do a little bit of it, a facsimile of it, because you saw what they did. It's like you watch somebody climb a ladder, you can climb a ladder, even though you never climbed a ladder before. So you borrow the energy from that person, apply it to you. And now the more you do that, now you're building up your own resume, your own stash of belief in you doing the thing. So again, you just borrowed it from Kevin Durant. You do it a few times. Okay, now you don't need him anymore. Thank you, Kevin. Now you can borrow from yourself. And that's how you start to build it up, because the process for achievement in life is the being, then doing, then having. So you have to step into the being first. So instead of faking it until you make it and pretending to be, let's say, Kevin Durant or Tiger Woods or Serena Williams, instead you become yourself, the best version of yourself, by borrowing confidence from that other person and then applying it to you. So now, again, you can watch your own film instead of watching his film.
Yeah, that's powerful. I think so many people miss that, particularly in this health and fitness space, because I think people think it has to be this like solo isolated journey. And in athletics, I think it's very common to look ahead and have a favorite athlete that you emulate. You pick up their style, their moves, you know, and all these things. But when it comes to a fitness journey, so few people are doing this next step of finding someone to embody, like a mentor, someone that's come ahead of them. And I'm just reflecting on our Fit Father and Fit Mother communities. I think the reason so many people have been massively successful with the plan that has some of the same elements that you'd get from like a local personal trainer is the fact that they can model and see people in our community who have been a couple years ahead of them and can listen to a podcast episode, can see them post and can maybe embody some of that energy. But this is certainly an area that we can all do a lot more in. And as you're sharing, like, I know for me as a CEO entrepreneur, like, there's a next level of embodiment that I can bring into my being. So confidence and embodiment is something I'm taking from this big time. So we have discipline into confidence, mental toughness. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean? And how is mental toughness? Like, how is it different than discipline? And like, how do we define it? And how does it show up in this process?
Mental toughness is like the security guard of your discipline and your confidence.
Nice.
That's how I define mental toughness. So it's how I lay it out is your willingness to continue to be disciplined and continue to be confident, even when being disciplined and confident and doing all the quote unquote right things have not yet produced the desired outcome. That's what mental toughness is about. And the reason it matters so much, Anthony, is because no matter how smart you are, how hardworking, or how clean your plans are, at least you think they are, something is not going to go right. Something's going to break. Yeah. Something's going to go left when you expect it to go right. Someone's going to disappoint you. Someone's not going to show up. It's just something's just not going to go perfectly. Why? Because we're human beings and none of us is perfect. So mental toughness is about how we handle it when things don't go according to plan. Not if, but when. And mental toughness, if I have all these things that we talked about here, confidence is the one people most go looking for. Discipline is the one that is most important, but mental toughness is the thing that protects everything. It protects everything that we're talking about. Basically encompasses this whole thing, because mental toughness is really just protects your entire human condition. It's like the, a lot of people sometimes try to draw this juxtaposition between mental health and mental toughness. And I say mental toughness is like the, again, the security system for your mental health. Mm-hmm. Mental health is just your overall human condition. Mental toughness is about how we handle the situations that get thrown at us in life and deal with whatever comes before us. And that refers to not only when we are in challenged situations and things are not working, but also when things are working. All right, you think about in the sports world, a basketball team, they play 82 games a season, or at least they have 82 on the schedule. We don't know how many players are going to show up for, but 82 games on the schedule. And let's say you had 30 points each of the last three games. The fourth game, none of those points carry over.
Yeah.
All right. You still have to show up to the fourth game as if the previous three games did not happen. And it's the same thing in business. Let's say you just had, you closed great deals the last 3 days. That has nothing to do with what you're doing today. That has nothing to do with the sales calls on the calendar today. You still have to show up and close those deals. So mental toughness is especially important once people start to get to higher and higher levels of achievement, because we tend to relax and take our feet off the gas pedal and rest on our laurels when we are winning. But the highest level performers are never satisfied with what they've achieved. They're always looking to push themselves further. As long as there's a game on a schedule, metaphorically speaking, they continue to show up as if they haven't achieved anything. Mm.
Yeah, like let's speak into that a little more, because I think that in my life experience and perspectives, it seems like there's a couple ways to become mentally tough. It seems like there's like the maybe like the Michael Jordan or Kobe mentality of just like, there's an inherent draw to this greatness and a massive competitive nature that you always want to keep on pushing the bounds, and that can keep you tough because there's an aggressive pursuit of growth and competition that can lead to a mental toughness. And honestly, building up your ego where you think you're like the greatest. I also think there's an avenue to mental toughness on the other side, where it can honestly come through a degree of softness in play, where like there's some people who just don't take things quite as seriously in terms of like the emotional weight they carry. They still execute, but they have a lightness about them where if something happens, it's not the end of the world. It can kind of roll off their shoulder and they can get back into this more play, growth mindset, flowing mentality. So just with these couple ideas, right, I'd love for you to kind of just, yeah, expand this out and give your perspective on what I just shared.
As far as continuing to push for success.
Well, I guess like these seem like a couple different ways to become mentally tough. Like you can be mentally tough, right, from a perspective of like that kind of badass, like really like I'm here to perform. There's always another day. There's always another level. And it seems like there's another way to become mentally tough through like, I guess a little more of like a softness by just not taking things quite as seriously, where showing up and it's not like, oh my gosh, I got to close another deal. It's almost like that childlike, like, closing deals is so fun. I'm so excited that I get to do another thing. And that would keep you tough if there was a hard situation that happens, because you feels like it's all more play. It seems like there's a hardness and a lightness, and they both lead to a mental toughness. And maybe that's just someone's personality about which avenue they choose. But like, or maybe you don't agree with me whatsoever about like this kind of duality of through mental toughness. I'd just love for you to speak on it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a person's personality and their internal makeup. And it's also depends on the situation, mm-hmm, because the same person could be full speed ahead, foot on the gas pedal in one aspect of their lives, but in another aspect of their life, they're not taking it so seriously when things are not going that great, but it doesn't destroy them.
Yeah.
Either way, they don't get destroyed by things being off. Yeah. But on one side, they're looking at it as, I am not sure about things being off because I'm going to double back and I'm going to come back tomorrow and I'm going to make up for what didn't work today and win anyway. And then another aspect of the guy, the same person, they can say, okay, well, I'm not thrown off by this not working because I'm not so bought into, you know, the outcome here anyway. I'm just enjoying myself. I'm having a good time. I'm going to do my thing. But if this doesn't go perfect, that's completely okay because I don't have all my chips in this. I don't have all my chips on the table when it comes to this aspect of life anyway. Mm-hmm. But either way, things not going the way they expected doesn't throw that person off. So this is, I think, at the core of it is what I just said, is that when things don't go the way that a person expects them to go, they have the mental tools to deal with it and they can compartmentalize in whatever way they want, whether it's I'm going to work harder and beat this situation down, or I'm not that bought into this anyway, so this is not going to disturb me mentally just because, you know, I'm a basketball player, but I had a bad day in golf. It's not going to stop me from playing basketball as well as I can. It's not going to keep me from coming and playing golf again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. How much does the idea of faith play into mental toughness? And what does faith mean to you? Are those things connected in your mind?
Yes, they are. So I talk about the concept of applied faith often. And applied faith is actually connects to the fourth principle here, which is personal initiative, because applied faith is about going and taking action on an outcome that is, as of yet, unseen, has not been proven, doesn't not realistically, but physically, tangibly exist. But you can see it in your mind, and therefore you're willing to take action around it. And that's where applied faith comes from. The only time and the key asset, let's just say, in order to utilize applied faith is personal initiative, because initiative is all about starting something, taking the lead, moving first before something or someone forces you to move. And if you are a leader and you're a person who's ambitious and you want to be successful, you utilize your applied faith. And because you see an outcome before it actually exists, you are willing to take initiative on that thing, which usually means putting something on the line, putting yourself on the line, your ego on the line, maybe your money on the line, your energy, your time, your focus on the line, because you see something that doesn't exist yet. And usually the game changers, the people who make big change in our society and in life, period, the leaders, they're the people who have the highest levels of initiative because they are applying faith behind, again, a vision, not behind something that you can hold in your hands.
Yeah, for sure. And that what's powerful about that is it seems like it inherently that means you're putting something on the table, you're risking something, you're investing something. And I see that's right. Now we have a culture of just like information shallow is everywhere. Shallow commitments are everywhere. People are not really investing. They're doing tiny dabbles of attention all over the place. And that seems like that's the antithesis of this personal initiative and investment, where it's like, I believe in this. This is deeply important to me. I'm going to actually really give a lot of myself and risk myself into a very focused area. Does that seem ring true to you?
Yes, exactly. And that's usually you find a high level of personal initiative in entrepreneurs, because as an entrepreneur, you're starting something that didn't previously exist. And you're also saying, you're applying faith behind your own ideas and saying, all right, these things are out here, but I think my idea is better than what currently exists, than the incumbent ideas. So usually in entrepreneurs, you'll find a ton of applied faith, even if it ends up not working. But you can't take the first step if you don't believe you have something that's better than what already exists.
Throughout your year, Dre, do you have like a regular check-ins or resets? I know there's like New Year's resolution time, but there's also probably some people that run their years on like 90-day calendars or check-ins or little bumps and stops along the way where you get a chance to like check in, collect, maybe recommit to personal initiative. Like, is that a part of your personal performance flow? And do you advise that for your clients?
Absolutely. And I don't even wait 90 days. It's every 30 days.
Nice.
So I set goals every month. I set goals for the year. I set goals even longer than that, 5 years, 10 years, and lifetime goals. And I keep a list, or not a list, but let's say a document, like an Evernote document of just reminders, things that remind me. So I might see a nice quote in an article that somebody sends via email, and I'll screenshot it and cut it out, put it in my Evernote folder. And I look at that folder, look at those folders, I'm more than one. look at those every day. Mm-hmm. Not every single one of them, but I'll just scroll through and pick the one that I need to look at that day or even in that moment in the middle of the day. Just reminding me of things like what you just said, of goals, of having a sense of urgency, of understanding that we have a limited amount of time here on this planet. And because I take that stuff in so much, it comes out of me. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of stuff that I talk to my audience is about. I mean, that's not the only thing I talk about, but it comes out of me because I take it in so often.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. It's almost like that's your mental diet, right? You're just being very intentional about what goes into your mindset and those reminders that keeps you on purpose and then obviously comes out. So I think it kind of, this moves me to a fun direction because I want to talk a little bit about how you apply these concepts as a parent with your kids. You know, I hear some kids running around in the background, so I know you have a fun house with these some young ones. And how do you teach your kids and instill these values and principles into them? Like, how does it show up as your parenting philosophy?
Well, there's only one of them. He just makes a lot of noise. he's only 18 months, so he's not quite able to absorb a conversation like this one just yet. But when he does, he's going to read all these books you see behind me. They're going to be his assignments. And I got plenty of material I'm going to give to him. And then we're going to sit down and have conversations about it. So two things I said I'm going to make sure my kids are going to understand from very young ages is personal development. And they're going to understand personal finance.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else they choose to do is their choice. But those two are mandatory.
Yeah, and that's really great advice. And I'm excited for your son. Because he's going to get a really powerful upbringing with the context of everything that you embody so powerfully. Let's talk about technology. Like, I feel like that's honestly seems like it's a massive tool, but also a stumbling block for many people to achieve what they want. On one end, we have these platforms that you can access any amount of information. You can publish things that can reach millions of people. On the other hand is when we walk around outside, we see people like zombie necking down on their phones and just completely distracted. And like, it's like their life force is being sucked out by like consumption. Whereas like you are the opposite of that. You are a creator. And it seems like you're like guarding your energy and then channeling it in very intentional ways. Speak into what you see with tech and phones and like how that's either helping or hurting people. And I think that'd be really valuable for all of us.
Great question. So I absolutely do see that all the time. And I always get I don't know what the word is. You maybe can supply me the word. But when I'm walking outside and I see somebody walking by and they're looking down at their phone so much to the point that they don't even look up and see who the person is that they're walking past.
Yeah.
I'm like, this person is putting themselves in a very precarious position. Because what if you never know who you're walking by? You never know who that person is, what they might be planning, what they might be about to do. And you didn't see anything and they're completely oblivious to it. I can be walking somewhere and someone will be, you ever had somebody almost walk into you because they're looking at their phone, not looking. And then when their peripheral vision, they notice there's a human coming. They still don't look up from the phone. They just go around you so that they don't walk into you. I'm like, this person they have a very low level of awareness.
Yeah.
And what I find is the most successful people, Anthony, are extremely aware. They have an extreme level of awareness. They're noticing what's happening around them. They're very perceptive because us, especially as creators, we have to be very aware and perceptive, because if we're not aware and noticing what's happening, then first of all, we're not going to have any ideas, because eventually we're going to get to the bottom of our own mental wells. And now we're not going to see the opportunities right there in front of us. And the most successful people are opportunists. Right? We notice opportunity in places that other people simply don't notice, because most people are not paying attention. They're blind to the opportunities in front of them. And I think I forgot, what was the word you say? Like the zombie?
Yeah, they're like a zombie necking around. But yeah, I see it. They're like being sucked in.
Right. Zombie necking at the phone is like a microcosm of people just being unaware.
Yeah.
And all they're paying attention to is what they see there on those devices.
Mm-hmm.
So answering the rest of your question here, I'm the type of person who I always tell people that you want to produce more than you consume.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that you don't consume. I have to consume, because with as much as I produce, again, I'm not coming up with all those ideas by myself. Mm-hmm. So I have to read, I have to listen, I have to watch, I have to pay attention, I have to notice things. And then I have to play around with the things that I notice in my own head so I can come up with my own angle on why I want to talk about that thing. But at the same time, my output is going to be pretty, most of the time, is going to be more than my input. And anytime I'm taking in more than I'm consuming, that's only because I'm loading up to do a whole bunch of output. So when it comes to the technology, especially with social media, I've said this to my audiences, and I don't think the social media platforms won't let this content get seen, not this one, but the one where I said it, was that people don't even understand how social media works. So they never really think about it. But social media is based on monetizing the time and attention of the users, and we don't get to participate in the financial upside. Right? They make money by charging the advertisers. The advertisers make money because they get to sell their stuff. And we are the product. Now, we create all the content. We're the product. And we're the reason that they can charge. And we're the reason that they can make money. So doesn't mean don't use social media. I use social media a lot. We post on social 7, 8 times, 10 times a day. Mm-hmm. But I use it as a producer, not as a consumer.
For sure. I love that. I want to ask you in just a moment about like your daily routine and some of the stuff that you do, incorporating fitness with productivity, with family time. Before we get there, I just want to comment. I think it's fun whenever I go on, let's just say YouTube or Facebook, like now knowing how the algorithm works, I look up into like the little shorts that they're trying to show me. And then I just look at it. I'm like, what does the algorithm like think it's trying to hook me? And it's like in the top four, it'll be like maybe an attractive woman, an old friend I haven't connected with in a while, you know, maybe some like hobby or sport thing I'm interested in. It's like they're like fishing for four hooks for my attention. And so even just becoming aware of what that is and not getting sucked in, I think is very helpful. And then you can see where these attention hooks are trying to grab you. And once you're aware of that, you know, you don't merge with that as much.
I'm opening YouTube while you're talking, seeing what they're showing me. Yeah. But I never click on these, so they just keep changing them until they find something.
Yeah, they don't know. The algorithm has like no idea. We have no idea what this Dre guy likes, but he produces a lot of videos. Maybe they'll show you your own videos.
Yeah, sometimes my own videos come up.
I bet they're like, Dre's going to click. At least you're going to click on his content to see how it's doing.
Right. Even on Instagram as well. Instagram is even crazier.
Yeah. All right. So what does a day in your life look like? How do you weave in your fitness with your productivity, morning, evening routines, even get down to your nutrition as granular as you can be? I think it'd be very helpful for us to hear about your life in that way.
Sure. So I'll tell you the easiest part first, which is from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock. That's my work time. And that's not always the same because this conversation right here doesn't happen every day. So between 8 and 5, that's when I'm doing any type of calls. That could be a sales call. It could be a coaching call. It could be any group call. It can be a conversation like what we're doing right now. Client stuff, project stuff, writing a book, mm-hmm. recording material, etc. There's all different things that happen between that 8 and 5 window. Mm-hmm. Before 8 o'clock, I wake up at about anywhere from 3:30 to 3:45 a.m. Mm-hmm. And that's when I spend that first 4 hours doing all the, I guess what we call self-care. So that'll be workout. These days is either a boxing gym half the time and running outside is the other half of the time. Then I'm getting in the jacuzzi when it's in my building. We've been having some issues with it, but when it's working, I'm getting in the jacuzzi for about 15 minutes, shower, shave, getting dressed, yoga is in the morning, yoga and meditation in the morning to start the day. I eat 2 pieces of fruit, usually bananas. Then I do the workout. Mm-hmm. So then after the workout, I'm foam rolling, stretching, jacuzzi, shower, shave, get dressed. And by the time I'm done doing all that stuff, it's usually in the 7 o'clock hour. And then by 8 o'clock, I'm working. Mm-hmm. So I'm working from 8 to about 5 usually. I want to be done by 5 most of the time. Then I'm taking my son out for a walk. That is usually about an hour and a half. And then giving him time to, you know, play outside and things like that. And then I'm home. I usually eat some type of snack in the evening. As far as meals, I eat lunch around 10 a.m. I eat dinner around 3 p.m. And then I'll eat a snack in the evening. That'll be after I take my son out. So that'll be around 6:30, 7 o'clock. And I aim to be in bed by 7:30, but usually I am at least there by 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then is back the next day. And on days when I have long workouts, which is almost every day, I usually get some type of snack in between lunch and dinner. So like around this time right now, it's about 12:45 Eastern. I probably would eat something. So I'll go grab, sometimes it's a slice of pizza. Sometimes I go to a local nutrition store and get a little pre-made meal. Mm-hmm. There's a shop down the street that now makes burgers. I got a burger yesterday. So right now I'm actually thinking about what am I going to eat today?
Got it. And do you have breakfast? Yeah. I missed that. I know you got the fruit before you work out. But do you have anything between then and lunch?
No breakfast. So I have the 2 pieces of fruit in the morning and I have a protein shake.
After you work out.
After the workout.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, cool. I mean, I like that. I think what stands out for me about your schedule is just a lot of people say, I don't have the time to X, Y, Z. And you just wake up early enough that you fit that in, which phenomenal self-care. So by the time you get to like 8 a.m. work, you've already done so much for yourself. It's got to feel great. And you feel super primed and ready to rock, crush it. And then, you know, you wind down and you obviously aren't doing the same thing many people do, is wasting, you know, 1 to 2 hours at night watching some mindless thing on the TV. And, you know, that you're just shifting that time into the morning so you can kind of like be productive in self-care.
Right. I don't even own a TV. I mean, I got the iPad and the computer and all that, but no TV. And the other thing is, especially as a father with kids, is you want to wake up early enough that you get some time that's not interrupted. So that time is, nobody's awake at that time. So by the time I get around seven, 8 o'clock hour, that's when the humans start waking up. But I've already done a bunch of stuff for myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. I absolutely love that. And so what do your workouts look like these days?
So it's these days is boxing gym three times a week. So we're recording this on a Friday. I went to the boxing gym today. I work with a boxing trainer because I'm the boxing expert. And then I'm running outside the other days of the week. And that's anywhere from, like, I've settled into about the 10K distance is my favorite, which is 6.25 miles, 6 1/4. So I run 10K races maybe anywhere from 2 to 4 times a year. So I'll run that distance, roughly that distance, 6-7 miles-ish, 3 times a week.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. What if you learned about, you know, applying some of these principles to your primary relationships in your life, you know, with your spouse, you know, in particular, or with your close friends? Like, does this framework also work in relationship contexts? Is that something you think about?
That is not something I think about. I don't think it would. I think if I tried to apply this in my personal relationship, I don't think it would go too well. I think I probably tried it and it didn't work and I didn't do that anymore. So no, I don't apply it in my personal relationship. But with people who I work with as a coach, I've often been able to help them navigate things, albeit I'm only talking to one side of the relationship. I'm only talking to one person and they're telling me what's going on. And I can just give them some, because often in relationships with someone's, let's just say, complaining or griping about what's happening in a relationship, they're telling you their side of the situation. So from their side, I can look at it and say, okay, well, I don't know what your wife did. I don't know what your husband did. I can only go off of what you're telling me and what you did. So let me just hold you accountable for your side of this.
Right.
And if we fix that, that might fix the whole situation.
Awesome. And I think this is a nice transition to you sharing for a few minutes what you help people with, like how your clients actually work with you, what outcomes you help people achieve. And then for the people who are still listening to this or watching this, like how they can connect with you, learn more about your work, and like honestly get plugged in and get your support.
No, the interesting thing, Anthony, is that I started off just talking to athletes. My first 5 years online, all I was talking to was athletes. Then from about 2010 on, I had a very mixed audience of professionals, entrepreneurs, and athletes. And then when I started to get into, you know, speaking and coaching, of course, you get more professionals coming around. As far as what we do now, our biggest focus is Work On Your Game University. That's where we do all of our, you know, coaching, consulting, speaking programs, et cetera. And we have a very eclectic audience of people. So we have people from the military. We have finance people. We have brick and mortar business owners. We have just a new person has a food truck. We have people who have a health business down here in South Florida. And the reason why my audience is so eclectic is because our frameworks are universal. They apply to anyone. So you don't need to be an athlete. You don't need to know anything about being an athlete. You don't have to have a similar background to me to work with me, because, again, our frameworks are universal. And who we focus on are just people who want to be high level performers. So people who are ambitious about growth, because nobody goes looking for a coach or a trainer if they're not ambitious about getting better. All right. Because you could just be OK by yourself. So I can't say that we have a specific industry, because there isn't a specific industry, but people who want to be top 2% performers is how we describe it, because to be a pro athlete, you have to be in the top 2%, and we're taking the tools that help athletes get there and we're applying those same tools in business.
I love it. So for those interested, that was Work On Your Game University. If you are watching this on YouTube, it will be linked in the description. If you're listening to the podcast, it will be linked in the show notes on the Fit Father or Fit Mother Project blog. And Dre, I just want to thank you for coming on. I found a lot of value in your framework. I love the mix of the simplicity of it, but also the depth in each of the pillars. And I have a lot of things that I'm personally going to take from this and work on. So thank you for your time today, brother. I appreciate you.
Well, Anthony, I appreciate you sharing your platform and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Fit Father Project podcast. If you love what you heard, please rate and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts. It really helps spread this show to more men who need this valuable info. To watch full video episodes of this podcast and other motivational videos to inspire your training and more, visit our Fit Father Project YouTube channel. It's free and everything's made for busy guys over 40 like you. Visit youtube.com/FitFatherProject to get access to our entire video library. And finally, if you or someone in your life is interested in becoming a fit father or needs help losing weight, building muscle, and living healthier after age 40, then visit fitfatherproject.com where you can see our proven programs, supplement line for guys 40 plus, and free meal plan and workouts to get you started. This is Dr. Anthony Balduzzi signing off. I'll see you in the next episode.